go. Good morning. And this week, as our guest on the Window Boxes editions by iWin and the WCI, we've got Rosemary Reaver, a current master of the WCI. And I've just been told by Rosemary she's 153rd woman master in 800 years out of all of the livery companies. I believe there are 110 livery companies and there are 25 lady masters in total this year, which we can talk about in a bit, but that strikes me as quite a lot in 1 year. Yeah. Rosemary is also a non-exec director and had a long career in Lloyds as head of international regulatory affairs prior to that. So Rosemary is a master of the livery I'm very proud to be a member of. So Rosemary, I just want to ask you, what are you going to talk to us about today?
Well, I'd really like to talk about mentoring and how that is so key to helping people feel that they belong. Mentoring and belonging, really.
Okay, that sounds great. So, I mean, in the course of your career, have you had sort of role models or people that have made an effort to mentor you? Did you go out and seek a mentor, or did it sort of happen a bit sort of organically?
It really did happen organically. And in fact, when I was thinking about this and looking back, I realised that there are so many people in your life that you can take support from. And I've been very lucky through my career, actually right back from when I was at school and university, to have people who've been role models, particularly women, but also men, and people who have helped me on the path. And actually, when you realise that, you realise how absolutely critical that is. And what they actually did was make you feel that you were worth it, that you you had the skills, had the competence, and they gave you that confidence on the way. And I think without that, I certainly wouldn't be, you know, talking to you today.
And so when thinking back to those early days, did those people at that time realise that they were a role model for you or for others in your cohort? Did they realise that? Did you tell them, or was it just somebody that you admired and whose behaviours and that you thought were very positive? Did they know at the time, do you think, or was it something that you
observed? I don't think they did. I really, really don't think they did. I mean, I'm thinking particularly of one or two teachers, and then most of all, my director of studies at Cambridge. I got a free place at school, so I remember being very frightened in the first year and thinking, gosh, this is a school I don't belong in. It was an independent girls' school. I got to Cambridge and read classics amongst a whole load of guys from Eton, and again, didn't really feel that I belonged. I know I was laughed at for my Midlands accent and what I said. And my tutor then, her name is MM, I went back only last year to her 70th birthday party. And when I met her, I suddenly realised how much I owed to her. I mean, I'd never asked a question in lectures, and I would never speak up, which most people nowadays would think was impossible, including my husband, who's always talking and asking questions and challenging. But she created that sense that, you know, I had a right to an opinion, and my opinions, even despite her brilliant brain, my opinions mattered. And when I met her on her 70th birthday, I had to write her a letter to explain how key she'd been.
Wow.
And I remember, accelerating much further forward, going along to meet somebody who was talking like I am now about the importance of coaching others. And she told a story about how after 10 years, somebody came back to her and told her how important they'd been at a really critical part of her lives. And that's when I suddenly realised that's what I wanted. I suddenly thought, I want to be that kind of leader. So that's when I thought, that's what you've got to do. You've got to give back without the expectation that you may not be helping somebody, but at least if you try. I think if you remember in my installation speech, I quoted Michelle Obama, who said everybody on their journey in life has to have three people: the person they admire and follow, the person who walks beside them, holding their hand and making sure, and there's lots of us, aren't there, in the livery that do that, you know, men and women that support us, and then the person you reach back for.
Yeah,
and that's what I heard so loud and clear in one of the iWin events that you hosted last year, Karen, and our new liveryman Maxine Goddard spoke at. And she said that you can only belong and feel like you belong if somebody reaches back for you.
You have to be
because otherwise you spend your whole time feeling, you know, that I don't belong here. So that's what we've been trying to do in terms of supporting people in the livery as well.
And, well, I certainly, Rosemary, as a member of the Livery, certainly feel that your leadership as master during these last few months, of you finish as master in October, is that right? Is that your
yes,
year?
That's right. Yes, it's been a very strange year because of COVID, sadly. Yeah. But in a way, a very enlightening year. You know, we've had to have less focus on our what we call grand events, the dinners, the very traditional dinners, which when you first go to, you think are odd, but actually they have a wonderful
historic
presence about them. And that's something now we're doing webinars and things like this now, aren't we?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things I'll say I've noticed about your leadership of the Livery, is it does feel much more inclusive. It feels easier, Rosemary, if that's a phrase I can use, and I'm not sure how I'll define that, but it just feels easier to be a member of the delivery for me and feels more relevant. So, and I think your leadership has done that, not for me, but for lots of others as well. So I think you should be aware of that it feels like a place that has relevance in the insurance industry. And I think we can talk a bit about the delivery because it's something I think that a lot of people, unless they understand that world, and I just scratched the surface, they don't kind of understand what liveries do. And we can talk a bit about the philanthropy and the charitable aspects in a bit, I think. But when you were at Lloyd's for a number of years, Rosemary, and obviously running a team as head of international regulatory affairs, it seems to me you have some very strong values about making people feel they belong. Is that something that's, I mean, it's clearly your leadership style. How did you do that for people, not just in the Lloyd's environment that you're in, but you continue to do now? What are the things that are important to you that you as a leader want to make people see so that you can pursue this feeling, very strong feeling you have about making people belong?
Yeah, that's very interesting, isn't it? Because when I first joined Lloyd's, which was getting on for 35 years ago, gosh, it was that very old fashioned place. Yeah. But fairly quickly, I worked for some really, really amazing people. I was very lucky to be sent to New York, where I worked for this amazing Italian-American lawyer. And then I worked for Sir David Rowland, who sadly died last year. But he was an extraordinary chairman who led Lloyd's out of disaster.
Yeah.
And he did it in teamship. You know, and again, it was this suggestion that, you know, the people around you are part of success. You know, one of his phrases was, you should never be afraid to hire people more clever and more able than yourself and recognize that, because you can only ride the wave of their success, he said. And he very much created that environment where, you know, he respected others around him and encouraged their views and took advice from them. Mm-hmm. And I guess I took that model forward. I then worked for some other really great people, and I realised, learnt lots through various ways. Some of the people are still in our market today who actually I'm still in touch with. And what they taught me was, the whole model of leadership is to inspire others to be themselves more with skill.
Yeah.
Try and help others to be themselves more with skill.
I love that. That's a really great phrase, because we often talk about, you know, finding ways to be yourself at work and have coming in and being to represent who you are in the workplace as you would be at home. So you have those consistent values. But I love that. Be yourself, but with skills. I think that's fantastic.
Right. Well, I can't take credit for it. It's from a professor. from a professor at LBS called Rob Goffey. I was introduced to him by Julian James, who's currently Master Girdler, but was one of my bosses through a very important era for me where I had young children. Yeah. He was immensely supportive. But he introduced me to Rob Goffey, and he talked about, you know, leadership is about being yourself more with skill and inspiring others to do that too. And I just think that, if you can fulfill the business purpose, but do it in a way that allows other people to grow on their journey. Another thing I think is that you should never assume somebody, doesn't matter what age they are. I mean, I first encountered this in an ageist sort of way. It doesn't matter what, you should never assume somebody can't learn, change, or find new skills.
And that's a very interesting thing that you've mentioned there, because I would say that, you know, now sort of in sort of my coming up for my mid-50s, ouch, I think one of the, I don't feel necessarily that I face interesting situations from being female. I sometimes find I face interesting situations and conversations from being a certain age. And I've kind of try not to be oversensitive about it, but it is interesting, isn't it, that people make an assumption that you can't do something or you can't learn something when you get to a certain age in your life. And I think that's a massive driver in sort of inclusion and diversity angles is age and ageism.
And that's a problem. I do agree with that, and I think that the other thing is sort of balancing that business of expertise, which is really, really important with innovation, and not assuming that people who are experts can't be innovative either.
Yeah.
And indeed, this is the thing I learned from David Rowland, not assuming that the very young can't be absolutely rock solid, you know, drivers of new ideas and strategies. It's that being open to other people's inputs. I don't know how you'd have to ask people who work for me what it was like, but I remember it being very much a team effort. And what I've learned from the livery company, and this is what I think is very interesting, is the history of the livery company. So livery companies have masters, not just the master of the company, but it's the old model of a workshop. You know, you can imagine workshops in the city of their crafts and their guilds. And the model of leadership then was that you have the master whose job is to tutor, support and help the apprentices and the journeymen. And the journeymen are the people who go out on their career pathways. And even before I knew anything about livery, a coach said to me years ago that I had that kind of style of leadership. Which is leading from the centre, leading from support, a supportive basis. And I think that's why, even though I only came to the livery very late, I found it such a great place, the fellowship of support that we have. You and I know that, and certainly this was not deliberate, it was part of the history of our industry. You and I know that 10 years ago there weren't very many women in our livery, but the masters of the last decade have absolutely driven us to a point where, you know, I inherit what they created, which is we now have 20% women. We're now bringing in at least 30% women as we accept new members. And it's becoming much more diverse through kind of creating that environment.
So I think your style of leadership, if you describe it to me, Rosemary, clearly represents the values about how important mentors are, inspirational role models, and then also creating a sense of belonging for your teams or the people that you're working with and your colleagues. So, you know, and I know you're now sort of taking on a non-exec role now as well.
Yes.
In very the industry. So it's great, isn't it, to put all of those skills back into use, but in a different framework. And I know, because I'm a non-exec myself, I find one of the things I enjoy about it is the ability to step back a little bit, perhaps observe, and then be able to interject, but not from an exec role, but as a guide and a suggestion, and can we do this, and questioning. And I think that's something that you'd be actually tremendously good at, because it, I think, pulls on those skills that you described from your leadership style. Are you enjoying being a non-exec, Rosemary?
Well, I'm very early in that journey. I did do some combination of being an exec at Lloyd's when I headed the team. I did some non-exec work both on the board of the CII at the London Institute, and also at the regulator, the financial regulatory, the FRC. And I really enjoyed that, because I got this breadth of exposure to people who'd had so many interesting careers and done different things and listening to different inputs. So for me, it was really stimulating. Now, where I'm really stepping up to be a non-exec on the board of New Line and to chair their risk committee, it's a new adventure and a new transition. Interesting enough, I remember thinking about how I wanted to lead a few years ago, and realizing I wanted to move to that place of more quiet reflection rather than total drivenness.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that women, you know, as you're talking about how you become older and how you add value, you know, that sort of model of a woman who's wiser and reflective and sits back and thinks. That I think does align to a more non-exec role. Also, where you're sort of being supportive, constructive in your challenge, and that's really what we're trying to do with delivery. You know, we've got lots of volunteers, so it's not like you're driving at a business goal. You've got very important goals, but you've you've got to find a wise way to get there. Yeah. And I think that's very much resonant with what you've got to do as an on-exec. But I am learning, I have to say. Going back to this business of mentors, I wouldn't be able to be a non-exec if I hadn't have had the chair who I work with, two chairs actually, Diane Hayter, now Baroness Hayter, Olivia Dixon, others, Robert Fletcher, Tim Carroll, our past master, who've been models for me in my later life, as David Rowland and Julian were in early life. And John Spencer, who I worked for in the past and who is now a non-exec. All of those people who you meet in life, giving you an example, but also encouraging you that you can do it too.
Yeah.
And trying to help you on that journey, really.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for that, I don't think I would have found the transition from executive to non-executive a very easy path. All transitions are difficult, but certainly having people helping me along the way and telling me that I do belong along the way
And
that's important to building confidence.
And I think that's one of the things that people need to realize, isn't it, how much value they add, even if they're not doing it consciously, but creating that sense of belonging, that you can do this and that support, and you'll be great at this. Try this out, I'm sure you'll be good at it. It is part of mentoring, isn't it? And supporting people as they change their career path and move to a sort of a different framework that they want to operate from, but still use the skill sets that they've gained. Rosemary, so you've gone from Lloyds, you're an on-exec director, you're now the master of the WCI, the Worshipful Company of Insurers, of which I'm a member. And I'm very proud to be a member because I think the insurance industry is a fantastically vibrant and interesting industry. And the fact that we have a livery to represent us is great, but I'm not sure many people necessarily know what that does or how it operates or how it fits into the framework. For me, one of the attractions is a balance between professionalism of an industry, but also having connections with the City of London and some sense of historical belonging in a space that I've gone into work every day for 30 plus years. It's quite a link for me that I enjoy the historical side of it, because it creates that sense of I don't know, place, if you know what I mean. But also our industry is one that is, I think, I'm not going to say unusual, but we have very traditional livery companies, which we can talk about in a minute. But ours is a modern livery. Representing a modern business, which one of the things I love about it is it changes and is vibrant and thrives through all sorts of circumstances. And I think that's probably quite a challenge, isn't it? Representing that vibrant industry within a traditional framework and making that relevant and making the members we have.
Yes.
A voice heard out into a wider city environment. So you ended up being the master, Rosemary. Is that, how much of that was planned on your part? Or did you just find yourself slipstreaming towards it because you were enjoying it so much and you're adding value and you suddenly found yourself in one of those positions where everybody goes, who wants to do the next thing? Everybody take a step forward and all your mates have taken a step back and you're left out standing thinking, what happened there? How did you end up on that track?
Well, it was by chance. I mean, before I answer the question, I must say I totally agree with your summary of why the livery is something attractive and resident in the modern era and why us, the modern livery, have those links to the past.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree with you. And I agree the livery companies use this word fellowship, and that's another aspect of belonging. And it's about your personal linkage to the past. I was very much welcomed with my family, and I thought, oh, I like this, because this is the cusp between my professional life and my family life. And it's actually all about me as an individual. I know we've talked about this because I win that you chair and have chaired so brilliantly for the last 3 years is all about independent women in insurance. And we talked about how we get that. So I want to play back that bit you just said about the livery, because I totally agree it. But no, how did I get here? Like everything in life, I didn't, and like, as you said, most people don't know about livery companies. So I went to Lloyds because I actually wanted to be a marine archaeologist. And so I thought Lloyds had something to do with shipwrecks. And I thought, well, I'll go and find out about shipwrecks for a bit in between being a marine archaeologist, one dig and another. And then the rest is history. I found out about insurance. You know, most of us don't come into insurance and think it's a great industry. And that's a problem even now. And most of my career I spent lobbying and advocating for our industry and our profession around the world for Lloyd's and the London market, which is an extraordinary collection of talent, innovation. It's historic, but evolving. Lloyd's talks about constant originality. You know, it's the foundation stone of security in a really well-structured city. But on the other hand, it's got this capacity to have innovation of new culture. So how did I find the livery? I was introduced to it by somebody I'd met through the Chartered Insurance Institute. So I think, like you, Karen, I always felt if I was going to be in insurance, one of my other really important role models, we both share this, don't we, is our fathers. Our fathers who supported us, who encouraged us, who said women can do it too.
Yeah.
And your lovely father, who you lost this year, my lovely father I lost 2 years ago. My dad said, well, if you're going to do it properly.
Yeah.
You've got to take the professional exams.
Yeah.
And through that, I met our lovely senior warden, David Sales, who is one of, you know, one of these very gifted aviation brokers in the industry. And I knew him through the CII. And one day I was talking to him at an event about what I was doing to mentor young women through the network, because I had a free place at this girls' school, the Girls' Day School Trust, the most historic girls' schools, where they give the largest number of bursaries. I was doing work with them to put them in touch with the CII, because the CII has a network of regional offices and so does the GDST.
Yeah.
And when I was telling David about what I was trying to do to encourage young women, mentor them and help them on a pathway of a career into our wonderful profession, David said, oh, you've got to join the livery. It's all about encouraging talent, supporting talent, helping people, philanthropy and education. I knew nothing about it. You know, it's about the network of fellowship that we have, David said. Yeah. So he introduced me, and he will be master next year.
Yeah.
And I think that's fantastic, because he's been talking about talent, diversity and inclusion is really important in our industry, and he brought me in. So that was 10 years ago, and at the time the master was Bronick Masiada, CEO of Hiscox, and he very much was part of the series of masters that were wanting to encourage more women in the livery. There were only 16 of us at that time, and now we have over 90 women,
which is great.
Yeah, I didn't really know what it was at the time, but like you, I thought I like this historic but modern thing. We both agree, and over the last 3 years working on iWin, that we wanted to make it more open, more modern, more relevant. We wanted to advocate for it. The philanthropy that we do is pretty extraordinary. A lot of our record compared to other livery companies, you have to be proud of.
Yeah.
We give away getting on for £200,000 a year. We collect from our members, almost everyone who is able to donate.
Yeah.
We collect £120,000 a year from our members. And then we have all sorts of volunteering opportunities. We work closely with Brokerage CityLink, trying to support young people into our industry. There's all sorts of things at different levels that people do. I've just been overwhelmed by that level of commitment. And then there's this second piece around education you've been part of, and Tim Carroll with iNed is part of, where we're trying to bring added value to those working in our industry. We are helping them with rich information about what's going on in our market, maybe helping them navigate some of the challenges. And some of the issues.
And we
do that collaboratively with others. And I know you've been absolutely key to talking about collaboration as a tool.
It's back to your comment earlier, and I hadn't really thought of it. I think it just describes perfectly what we try and do, certainly within iWin and the wider livery, and with others through collaborating, but be yourself, but with skills. And I think that's really at the heart of what we're trying to do, I think, in terms of, I think iWin has... It clearly represents opportunities for women in the market, but also I think we've moved into a space that's more inclusive for everybody, and this message about be yourself with skills works for everybody, doesn't it? I think, and also at any age as well. I'm a big advocate of continued learning as well, And so I think that's such a great...
I very much wanted to sort of create, you know, move that image of livery from the traditional guilds, which would have been, you know, I mean, although there's this fantastic article that I found that's been written about women through the 800 years, the history of women, written in City Civic.
Yeah.
And we've put it on our website.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a dense read, but it's got the names of thousands of women who did different things in over 100 years, either in terms of philanthropy or in terms of their crafts. Yeah. It's very inspirational.
It's nice to give those people a voice, isn't it, Rosemary, at whatever stage that is. It's nice to
have a voice in the past, exactly. Yeah. But I think what we're trying to do now through the collaboration with ICANN is encourage more BAME diversity, a broader spectrum of belonging, and explain to people this is something that actually, if you're representing our city, our profession, and a modern enterprise of philanthropy and professionalism, then it has to be more inclusive.
Talent driven, Rosemary. It's always been important to me that whatever we do, we have a hook of talent around it, because talent comes in all shapes and sizes, doesn't it? And be helping them, you know, helping people to recognise talent, I think is also a part of it as well. So back to the livery, Rosemary. So I'm going to ask you a question now, because I think we're a very relevant modern livery, and it's clearly easy to understand what we represent and how we can add our voice into the civic life of the city and demonstrate what a vibrant industry it is and how important it is to the UK. So tell me, there are lots of other livery companies. What's the weirdest livery company you've come across? Maybe weird is the wrong word, Rosemary. What is the most interesting livery company you've come across?
There's so many of them. So there's the glovers. So the master wears gloves. The gold and silver wire drawer. So what we've done is every year, but I feel particularly lucky. So past master Terry Masters put together a network. We discovered, so this is you going back to our profession.
Okay.
One of the things I did in my career was advocating for our industry globally. And that we've been trying to advocate for our industry within City Civic, because it is very dominated. That when people think of the city, they think of banks and stockbrokers. Insurance they think of as last.
Yeah.
So we've been talking to, as you know, I've been writing to the Lord Mayor and talking to him. And with the London Market Group, got him at their launch of London Matters. Really important to remind the city leadership, as we remind the government and others, of the real importance of our industry. Yeah. 47,000 people employed in the London market. And that's not just in London, that's around the regions that support the London market.
Yeah.
Contribution to our GDP, contribution to our wealth, contribution to the city. We represent, I think, 25% of the GDP from the city. So explaining that is very important. And so our past master, Terry Masters, reached out to other masters across the city. So some of these companies that are traditional old crafts, they're actually led by, actually mostly men at the moment, but men who have had a career in our industry. So we've got a group of insurance masters.
Heading up in the...
Yeah, and that included Master, lovely Malcolm Craig, Master Gold and Silver Wire Drawer.
Okay.
But gold and silver wire drawing, that's the stuff that they put on braid and uniforms.
Okay,
so the wire is what they make braid out of. So that company now supports... that kind of industry, but also embroidery, fabric. And they have a young like we have Young Freeman, you know, Engage, our initiative led by Josh Breckenfeld. We've been trying to do some collaboration with the young membership in the gold and silver wire drawers.
Fantastic.
And they tend to have what they call trade freemen, and they are young people who are working in different trades that they see as related. So that includes people making costumes for the Royal Opera House, people in making puppeteers. It also includes, for historic reasons, the publican of the Georgian Vulture, a lovely lady who runs the Georgian Vulture nowadays, and she's quite young. because they have historic connections with the Georgian Vulture.
I didn't know that. I mean, the Georgian Vulture is a watering hole I've been to many times recently.
The story is that their clerk got their royal charter. You know, every company, like we got our royal charter in 2015. We're very proud of it. And it's very modern, but lots of companies have ancient royal charters.
Yes,
there's the ancient royal charters of the vintners and the apothecaries. Apothecaries Hall is this tiny little dusty hall near Blackfriars, which you can visit as a liveryman. They run tours. Their clerk and the clerk's dog take you round. And the vintners that we have our events in, which is very historic, one of the oldest halls where they would have stored the king's wine for Guildhall down on the river, they have this amazing old hall. And then charters around. Well, the charter of the gold and silver wire drawers, having been given to the clerk, he went to celebrate down the Georgian Vulture and then got so drunk he left it behind in 16 something or other. So the publican brought it back, and ever since there's been this historic connection. So there's all this sort of stuff. And so Master Fletcher, there's this odd precedence that Queen Elizabeth worked out. I think it was to do with who designed the stained glass in Guildhall and paid for it. Yeah. But the top livery company, number one, is the Mercers.
Yeah.
They would have been, you know, the people buying and selling goods. We would think of them as, you know, the equivalent of Harrods and Harvey Nicks. And then the second is the grocers, who were the spicers. When I went to a grocer's dinner, they still hand round snuff.
Fantastic.
Which I decided I'd have a go at.
And how was it, Rosemary? How was it?
Mainlining snuff, my daughters thought was very funny. It was very clear to your head, that's all I can say. and they have these silver camels. So they hand it round on silver camels. So Master Mercer, Mark Aspinall, and Master Haberdasher, past Master Haberdasher, James Kinnemuth, Master Butcher, Tim Dumnall, Malcolm, Master Gold and Silver Wider, Master Fletcher's, they make arrows, Master Bowyer's, they make bows, Master Girdler, Julian, that's sword belts, and they still make the sword belt for the Queen. But they do a lot of philanthropy, you know, they have, and some of them have schools that they support, some of them have academies that they've set up. I mean, they're all the very, very big grand ones.
Yeah.
And then there's our group of financial services livery that the Lord Mayor in the 1970s said, I must have livery companies. Yeah. Because liverymen vote in, of course, our very ancient city of London. Yeah. So he said, we must have livery companies that are linked to the modern future of the city.
Yeah.
So we have 15 livery companies that are considered to be financial services.
Right.
Accountants, factories, bankers, management consultants, IT consultants, tax advisors, and world traders and marketeers, and all those that you would consider part of the modern livery. And this year, half of us are women.
That's fantastic.
And in lockdown, we've been sharing ideas and learning more about each other. We've had that advantage. We were already doing it for live, for real.
Yeah.
And that we have a chair of the FSG, past Master Andrew Marsden of the Marketeers.
So
we've been working together on various initiatives to understand more about how we can contribute particularly to the Lord Mayor's charities is what we've been doing.
I think you told me earlier that there's 110 livery companies in total, and that out of all of the livery companies, the 25 have lady masters this year, which strikes me as being quite a high proportion for something sort of not as mainstream as it could be, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's quite a high proportion. I think that's wonderful, actually.
I don't know if they'll ever write about it, but the FT picked it up, and the past master, the current master accountant is Hilary Lindsay, who has been very active at FSG and actually helped co-author the report on trust, which the former Lord Mayor Charles Bowman asked her for, which was all about how can we trust the professions in the city after 2008. But her theme this year has been belonging. So again, this goes to show how I steal all my ideas from everybody else. And her theme, she had one of our liverymen, Angie Peacock, speak at her installation dinner. But her theme of belonging is really important, because what we've learned, it doesn't matter whether you're female or what your background is, you can turn up at a livery event and feel very alone because you don't know people. Yeah. And it can feel very couple-y, which some people feel is, you know, is not very helpful. So, you know, we've had situations where people have said, no, we're going to try and make this much more inclusive. We're going to work also with that theme of belonging through our philanthropy, which includes things like working with City, you know, Brokerage, City Link. Yeah. And the charities that the Lord Mayor supports, Place to Be, which is about mental health, and the one which is trying to build places for people to be in the city where kids can play and congregate safely. So Hillary has been very instrumental in pulling quite a few of the ladies together. And what she said about 25 Lady Masters is she said, we really are the inheritors of what previous masters determined 10 years ago, because it's quite a long journey to be master. You have to be a liveryman, you have to be then warden. In fact, my journey was very short. I was only on court very briefly, and that's very untypical. I think that, you know, normally it would take about 10 years to get to be master if you joined a company. She said that very much this is what livery companies have been trying to achieve over the last few years to sort of broaden the diversity. Of course, one of the lady masters happens to be Fiona Wolfe, former Lord Mayor. So there are some really incredible women.
This point of that sort of 10-year lag, it then starts to take its own momentum forward, doesn't it? It just starts to build and build, and that time lag should get shorter, hopefully. I mean, one of the things that I think is important for me is when you see the liveries and you see the names, and there's an automatic assumption of they're very grand. But if you look at them and you look at the names and you think about what the names of the livery companies are, it actually does mean trade. It does mean different kinds of trade, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And I think that's a really important distinction that it represents.
Usually, whatever you do in life, you will find a livery company that you might like. So, you know, one of these interviews I saw from the marketers. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, I don't think the milliners have their own. I think they're associated with the woolers or the glovers, aren't they? The hat makers.
Yeah, probably. I mean, but there are furniture makers. Yeah, no, if you're passionate about hats. But there's also the art scholars who are passionate about art. And there's, you know, so somebody who I know joined the marketeurs because he suddenly realized, you know, he'd been in marketing and media all his life, and he said, well, why wouldn't I join this, you know, if I can?
So you talked
not
about
for everybody, as we know, we it's not for everybody, you know, you've got to be feeling that you've got a little bit of the time to give to it to get time back. What I'd like to do is that generally it's only when you get on court or to even be master that you get this exposure to the other liveries in the city civic. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to engage that more with the whole of our livery. We have 500
further down, drive it at an earlier stage until
We have 528 talented members.
Yeah.
All who have different time to give, and I think the livery member, being a member of a livery is a life journey. You know, 1 year you might not be able to do very much, you know, 5 years. We've got young members who absolutely full on in their careers. So our current chair of iEngage has got to step back because he's got to kind of get on with his career. You know, we've got other people who have kind of got to focus on their families or their relatives or other aspects of their life. But it's here for you to engage with how and when you want. I think that what we've got to do is create those opportunities for people to engage in different ways.
Yes.
And to actually, the only things we achieve are through volunteer. We've got tiny resource in the office, so everything is done by volunteering, absolutely everything. And I think to do that well, you have to do it as a team. It can't just be one or two people at the top. It's about finding out what do you love and what are you good at doing and what are you prepared to give. And enjoy. So it's got to be enjoyable, and that's what you've been doing as chair of iWin, something you're passionate about.
Oh yeah.
And sometimes it's been harder work, I know that, like all volunteering.
The best thing for me is some of the friends I've made through this. I wouldn't have met otherwise, and that's great. You know, I really value that. That's Fantastic. Now, you talked about the city. I mean, do livery companies have contacts with other cities where they have liveries, like York maybe or whatever? Do you have a reach outside of London with other livery companies that aren't based in the city?
So I haven't yet quite learned enough about this yet.
I don't know. So forgive me for asking.
Because of lockdown. So there are a few livery companies.
There's one
in Manchester and one in Cardiff and one in York.
Yeah.
I think some in Scotland even and one in Ireland. So the model of a livery company, some of those cities that would have had trades have livery companies. So the framework knitters are somewhere in the Midlands, which resonates with us. Coming from Nottingham, which was lace
maker. Hey, you're hosiery. I'm Leicester. I'm shoes.
So there's the cordwainers. And the other things I've learned, you know, are there is an amazing place, which its name escapes me, but up in just north of London, which is where it's a school for these crafts, and several of these livery companies sponsor apprenticeships and courses and programs. Capel Manor, it's called.
And
my daughter found out about it because she loves horses and she wanted to make bits and bridles for her A-level EPQ project, and that was the beginning of a long journey for her where she found out about the Loriners and ended up going to one of their events where she just met loads of people, vets, people who were interested in saddlery and things like that. And anyway, long story short, she's become an apprentice Loriner because the past master Loriner supported her. And that's just so important for her because she might want to be a vet. And it's also important for her because it's teaching her how to go to events and network and talk to people
in
a broader sense. So that's an example of how they're supporting a young person on her. She's only 17 at the moment on her career journey, trying to do her A-levels and then her degree. And then she, the Capel Manor, they have shoemaking courses.
Seriously, I'm going to have to check that out. So just when people listen to this, I'm going to get this wrong, but I'm going to have a go. Loriners make pieces for bridles, is that right?
That's right. Bits for bridles. So they make the hard stuff that goes in the mouth and the stuff that the stirrups, that's the word. The stirrups.
Thank you.
They make the leather bits that go with it. So they're making the bridlery, so to speak.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So
Master Loriner this year is a lady. Sue Dalkway, the wonderful Sue Dalkway, who has had a very illustrious career in all sorts of different ways. A lot of the women who are masters, you know, we won't have heard of them because they've not been CEOs of FTSE 200, but they've done all sorts of interesting things in their lives and they've got such a range of skills. So I feel quite lucky to meet some of, well, I mean, it's the same with the men, but, you know, I think it's a place where women can thrive in leadership, the livery companies, because it's much more open in a funny sort of way to having different people lead.
So you're very passionate about the livery, Rosemary, which I love, and I think you've communicated that passion to a number of us this coming up for 12 months or 9 months or how long you've been in the role as master. With that communication of vibrancy has certainly come across. When your year ends in October, what will you look back on? What do you hope that you've left as a legacy from your year as master? Because I think all masters do leave something behind that people can take forward or take bits and take forward. What would you hope, you know, in a 2, 3, 5 years time, you look back and you think, I was really glad I did that as something of my legacy of being master?
Well, I mean, that's a really difficult question. When I when I was at installation, I said that, you know, my goal was to invest in the future.
Yeah.
And that means taking the legacy. I talked about taking the torch from all the past masters of the past and passing it on. And a wise past master marketeer, Venetia House, I heard her speak and she said at an event, do no harm, you know, at least leave the livery in as good a shape as you received it. And we've had lots of, you know, we've got a very, very good charitable trust, all reformed by our two previous chairs, our current chair and our previous chair. We've got a vibrant membership, lots of talent. And so I really felt that what we needed to do was to invest in the future and create that pathway for younger people to come into the livery. and with that young people, more diversity. Yeah. And then part of investing in the future is also building, I think what I'd like my legacy to be is a vibrant group of committees, you know, with a passion to get on with the job of making things even better, if you like. Yes. You know, thinking about new ideas and engaging more with our membership. So, yeah I want my legacy to be, a vibrant set of committees that have got lots of things to do ahead of them. Really,
I'm sure you will have done that, Rosemary. I know we'll look back and think, God, it's a very pivotal year. I think having our first Lady Master of the WCI in an industry that is, I think, getting to be more inclusive. And as I say, you know, when we start to represent what our industry looks like, I think it's massively important. So I'm going to go back to something you mentioned earlier when you said you wanted to be a marine archaeologist. I know, and it's on your profile on our IWIN website, I know that you like scuba diving in British waters, which, you know, I might do that in the Caribbean, Rosemary, all right? But British waters, really? And is that... I mean, tell me about that, because I think that's a really interesting part of who you are, that you have this almost slightly insane hobby.
Well, I have two insane hobbies.
Go for it, Rosemary.
I was going to say, you probably want to see the photographs, the two insane hobbies. The one where I love swimming, open water swimming, which I've done recently, which is probably in the last sort of 6 years. Swimming Tooting Lido. I can't at the moment. We're all sad. But it's 100 yards long. It's the oldest pool in Europe. I think the oldest, biggest pool in Europe. And it's 100 yards long. It was 1906 it was built. Wow. There you are, the year of the San Francisco earthquake. And it's 33 yards wide, and we swim all year round. And sometimes we dress up in silly costumes, including the Esther Williams frilly hats. And
the 1950s. Like Rosie's on, the elegant backstrokes, as you.
And on my performance improvement plan, my development plan at Lloyd's, I always snuck at the bottom, you know, what's your goal in life? You know, to retire and become a tooting diving bell, because that's the ladies that do the synchro swimming. And one day I want to be one of them, but I'm not
good enough. It's not too late, Rose. It's so not too late.
Who knows? I have to keep improving my swimming and get the waterproof lipstick. So that's the latest hobby, and that is a bit bonkers, but I love swimming in the sea. So I'm very jealous of you that you're living.
Oh, yeah, but the scuba diving in British waters.
Scuba diving, I started years ago.
I can scuba dive, and I've got some quite a bit, but generally only in waters that tend to be crystal blue with pretty fish. Yeah. Do we have pretty fish in the British Isles, Rosemary?
We do. You have to look harder for them, and sometimes you have to endure some dives where you can't see anything.
Okay.
Why do I do it? I mean, it's, again, nowadays we wear dry suits.
Yeah.
My favourite place to dive is Scotland.
Yeah.
We have cliff walls, fast currents, deep wrecks. We also have shallow areas where you can dive, the Farns, where you can dive with seals.
Yes.
Diving through kelp forests, a bit like you'd see on David Attenborough, you know, where you see the kelp forests off California. And you can have, you know, shallower dives in different reefs. I don't know. I just love it. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
It's very challenging physically. You go out on the sea. Diving around the Hebrides is just extraordinary. I started, in 1987, because I thought I wanted to be a marine archaeologist, so I had to learn to dive.
Okay.
And doing that, I began to learn about British diving.
Okay. And
just love it. And yeah. I've dived the wrecks of Scapa Flow, you know, so again, the maritime links to our industry.
There's an edge of danger.
I'm with my eldest daughter, who's doing a degree, finishing her degree in history, and wants to do a master's in maritime history. She's very interested, and the younger one rides horses, the older one wants scuba dives.
There's an element of danger in this, Rosemary, that I find really intriguing about you.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah, I like that, yeah. I mean, I am with this compliance edge, I will always be, and as I've got older...
Well, you have to be careful to be a scuba diver. So.
Yeah, I've been a bit more risk averse, but I have done some quite mad things, and one of... my dear friends, who you've seen the photographs of me meeting him on the Lord Mayor's parade. So one of my dear friends who was in the Irish Guards, we met on a dive boat. He was a random person who came to on a dive trip I was on. And he, Nick Watson, He and I had a hairy dive once where he definitely saved my life.
Wow.
We did something slightly dumb, which was we went down to 55 meters on a wreck with a current at the bottom, but there you go.
Wow.
We thought that we could do it very easily because we'd been diving in Scapa Flow and we dived all the wrecks to 40, but we should have just been I should have just been a little bit more cautious about swimming against a current and getting out of breath.
See, I would say, you know, thinking about that, what you just said, and now about your management style and how committed you are to something, I think that edge that you love diving and it being something slightly left field and there's a danger attached to it, but controlled danger. I think that, I actually do think, having reassessed my opinion, that actually, that slight core of steel that you have about you, Rosemary, I think is there in your management style in a positive way. I think you're very committed and know which direction that you want to take. And you might bend and flow with it, but you'll get your way to where you want to be. And I think that there has to be a link with your love of doing something like scuba diving and going down to 55 meters, which I've ever been. And then actually being this collegiate guiding leader, wanting people to do the best that they can and then making sure that they stay on track. I think there's clearly links there. It's really interesting, Rosemary.
Oh, wow.
And hopefully when people listen to this, they'll be surprised by you and this sort of element, of slight edge that you like with those kind of, I mean, even outdoor swimming is not for the faint-hearted in our coastline, is it really?
No. But I have to say, now you're saying all of that, because I dive and swim with you know, people who do this far more danger or experience or skill than me. So I learned to dive when my dad bought me a course. I was 21, I just graduated, and my sister was 18 and wanted to be a marine biologist, and she went on and did a doctorate. And I think you've met my sister Ruth. So I dragged her along to Tooting Lido one June evening to swim in a relay, because I'd been invited to go from my sort of fitness swimming nights to the Lido to take part in a relay. And I was really excited because I thought it was because they thought I could swim a bit faster. I'm a very slow swimmer. And actually I discovered they just wanted a woman over the age of 50, because the team had to have somebody over the age of 50 and they had to have a female in it. So I said, oh, you only want me because I'm an old woman, not because of my swimming. And they said, yes. So I dragged Ruth along for confidence, because she swims and she's much more of an athlete. She cycles and she's very fit and she used to run up mountains. But anyway, she's actually swum in a relay of the Channel, and that's kind of hardcore.
That is hardcore. That's seriously hardcore.
I have to go and look for it, but I saw this amazing post about a woman who was the first woman to swim the Channel. And they all laughed at her in the 1920s. Yes. And somebody posted it recently. And she swam the Channel. The first time she swam, she failed. And they laughed at her. And the second time she swam, she beat the men by hours. She was not only the first woman, she was the fastest person ever across the Channel.
You're right.
Wow. You know, that's just fantastic.
I remember reading that recently, Rosemary, and I think we should put that onto Iwin website.
We should.
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
It's an example of, if you fail, don't let people laugh at you and tell you not, you can't do it, you know. But anyway, as I say, going back to that, I've been surrounded in both diving and swimming by my lovely sister, who will come with me and make me feel that it's okay. And she's far more, She's an instructor. She's instructor. Okay. She's far more experienced than me, and also again swimming. She's a scuba diving instructor, and then other people I dive with, like Nick and my dear friend David Fern, who we go on holidays with. You know, he's, despite health challenges, he's still diving, and
that's
he's an instructor too. And a friend of mine, Frank, who taught me to dive. All these people, they are mentoring and supporting you and encouraging you.
Yeah.
And when I go in, I always like to take the more nervous ladies. I like to take people who have been trained properly by somebody, not me.
Yeah.
But I'm the one that likes to hold the hand of the nervous ladies, or the people who need a bit of confidence building. So that's my space. That's my space.
And that's back to your sense of belonging, isn't it? Making people feel like they can be there and they can do it. Yeah. I love that. Rosemary, thank you. I hope you've enjoyed this.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for asking me questions.
We've cantered through a whole range of things. And I think hopefully, yeah. Rosemary, when you look back on your year as master, you'll realise for lots of us what an important year it's been. Thank you for that. It's great having you as my master of my livery company. And I love it. And thank you. And hopefully when people listen to this, they'll have an understanding of sort of some of the challenges, how important it is to be a positive and supportive leader, a bit about snuff, and also about scuba diving. So thank you, Rosemary. It's been fantastic.
And thank you, Karen, and thank you for all you do, because people who work with me, it makes it so much fun. So
thanks, Rosemary.